Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and rumradio.org. It's the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. Which is, I'm getting older, you know, the unknown universe is getting larger. I thought I knew everything until I hit about 50. By 60, I knew nothing. So I figured by 70, I should be back in kindergarten. I would like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Alabama as a public service presentation. They're very interesting guys. We call him Tony the Horse because he's the one fellow who brings the money into the station, and Hoyt is the station manager, hasn't taken a day off for 9 years and doesn't remember the last time he did take a day off. We can't really, he's not a wealthy man, so we can't call him eccentric. If you ever notice, the rich are usually has that wanted expectation of eccentricity. The poor can't afford eccentric. They have to settle for just plain crazy. We also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I'd really like to introduce my co-host, Harold B. He's a family intervention specialist. He does the fine work with troubled families. I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society. As the family goes, so does the nation. Before I go into that, I wanted to give the call-in number early. We have a really dynamic, we have a lot of really cool guests. This lady is probably one of the top of the list of our guests, Kathy Kinnan Linder. She's the daughter of Jimmy Kay, Jimmy Kinnan. He's the fellow who started or was one of the starters of NA. I believe he's the one who really got the thing off the ground. A lot of people in hindsight, you know, that if you get two addicts or two alcoholics in a room, you're going to get 15 opinions. But she's written a book, and we're going to be getting into that in just a minute. The call-in number is 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. And you're welcome to call in with any questions or comments that you might have. Otherwise, you're more than welcome to just listen. And Harold, so how are you this evening?
I'm great, Joseph. Thank you for the introduction, and thank you for establishing the website and the radio program. I just want everyone to know that this is not a money-making proposition, that you've begun all this as a public service, and as your way of giving back. I'm on here for the same reason. I also feel like Kathy is too. So I just want everyone to know that you've invested thousands in all of this work, and you continue to spend money on it, and it doesn't make money, so please feel free to call in and participate with a question or a comment during the program, and let me turn it back over to Joseph.
Well, thank you, Harold. I'm always humbled by your acclaim, but now that's enough about me. Would someone else like to talk about me? I like to start off the program. Some of you who've listened in with the third step prayer, I think it's real important. I also call it the surrender prayer. It's one of our main text prayers. It's found in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the disclaimer, like usual, this is not AA. This is not CA. This is not, this is probably closer to Paranoids Anonymous, where nobody tells you where they hold a meeting. This is Rum Radio. I use the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous because I believe the big book is the basic text for all 12-step programs. Everything derives out of the big book. And I understand, we'll get into it a little bit, that the NA has a green book, and I heard it was excellent. I've never read it, to be honest with you. Anytime anybody ever says that, I always turn around and go, You mean you haven't been on this all this time? But I've never read the Green Book. I've had friends that they speak very highly of it and believe it's a highly spiritually inspired work. I believe the Big Book is too. I'm familiar with the Big Book and the 12 Steps from that venue, and that's the venue I speak from. I believe the 12 Steps, any venue. Pardon me?
I've been reading another Green Book recently, and it's Sex Addicts Anonymous, and it's a wonderful program, and it's, of course, it's based on the same 12 Steps as Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous, and I really, really appreciate the work of Narcotics Anonymous. The last time I checked, the cover of the book was blue, but anyway,
okay.
That's beside the point. I'm really looking forward to tonight's program.
Okay, great. Thanks, Harold. Usually now the third step prayer also, how this comes about in the way I sponsor. Now, everybody's got a little bit different take on sponsorship, and rightfully so, because you can't really cookie cutter this. Rum Radio is about giving you tools and techniques of proven sponsorship areas. Everything on the website is experience, taken from the ability to experience this and find it to be proven. We don't work in theory. Although it's all based on the Big Book and the 12 and 12 and other program literature and things that we found to be productive and work. Now, everybody's a little different, but these are tools that you can pick up. Some sponsors have told me I implement or supplement my sponsorship with some information I get from Rum Radio. That's great. You already got your technique. It works great for you. Use the Big Book or whatever you do, and it's helping the next guy. Take a look, and I'm sure you'll find some tools that you hadn't considered before. And then it's your option to use them or not to use them, to agree or disagree, whatever. Most find that there's a tool or two. And who's got enough tools? And who would knowingly not use a tool when it's made available to you? So keep that in mind. When I start off with a sponsee, the first thing I ask them, have you had enough? If they ask what, usually they hadn't quite had enough, but if they ask what do you mean by that, I said, have you had enough pain? Have you had enough humiliation? Have you had enough drugs? Have you had enough alcohol? Have you had enough, yes or no? Yes. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no? Yes. Then I tell them you can get well from this disease, the mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. And I usually prepare myself with Clancy Eyes, 7 questions. It's a nice little format. I hand it to them. I believe luck is nothing more when preparation meets opportunity. So I'm prepared. You know, the student will appear when the teacher is ready. So Clancy 7 questions, and then we take it from there. And then I tell them, here's these questions. First thing I need you to do is answer these questions, and I need them back tomorrow. Here's my number. I expect your call. If I get the call back, he's taking a simple instruction, and we're up to the races. If I don't get it back, it's okay, too. Two reasons. It's either he's not ready or he's not ready for me, which in any event is okay. And then if I do get it back, the first assignment I give him is to call 30 people or so many people in his home group, to get a home group. That's his lifeline group. And every day for the next 30 days, call a different fellow on his lifeline list, newcomers packet, or have a sheet of paper run around the room with fellows' names to give permission to call. Get their permission to recite the third step prayer. The reason I have them do that is so they get used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help to connect them up with his home group. They get to know his name. He gets to know their name. It's going to encapsulate what we're going to try to accomplish by working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous or the 12 steps. And lastly, the fellow he's calling probably will not take, if he was thinking about taking that next drink or drug, probably will not, but no guarantee. But it's a good way of putting your sponsee into service immediately. And I believe that's the key to long-term sobriety. And this is the prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen. That's amen. Terrific.
Thank you. Well, now, I've, Kathy, you've been patient. So you're Jimmy Kay's daughter, and you've written a book.
Hello, Joseph.
Pardon me?
I said hello, Joseph.
Hello, Kathy. I'm so glad that
you're here. And hello, Harold.
Hello, Kathy. It's nice to be on with you. And let me mention just briefly, the way the electronics go, there's a slight delay in our voices, Kathy, so it makes it difficult. Sometimes Joseph will talk over us, but he's not doing that on purpose, so we appreciate your patience with that, too.
Okay.
So tell us, now, growing up with... How did that come about initially? I know you wrote the book, but tell us in the beginning. I mean, we had a nice chat conversation. Your dad initially went to AA. Is that correct?
My father was a very heavy drinker, and on February 2nd, 1950, he knew he had reached his complete rock bottom. I was 4 years old, and I had three older brothers, and he found his way into the North Hollywood Clubhouse in Southern California, and it was an AA clubhouse, of course, because there was no Narcotics Anonymous, and that is where he initially started and sobered up and also got clean, and he got a sponsor there. And that's where he started originally. And like I said, he got clean. And 3 years later, after going to that clubhouse for 3 years, he found himself going out on the back patio of that clubhouse an awful lot with a lot of other men and women. And they were doing a lot of talking. And what he discovered was that they were also addicts. They were addicted to drugs other than alcohol. And they kept telling my father that he needed to start something for the people that were on drugs. And he kept telling them, well, why don't you go do it? And I used to go to meetings there with him an awful lot. Like I said, I was 4 years old at the time when he started going there. And he got up on the podium one day, and he started talking to the members. He had about people who took drugs other than alcohol, and some of the old timers there took offense to it, and they told him, "Why don't you go out and start your own darn meetings?" And my father had quite a temper. And he said, well, you know, I think I will. And that's when he went out and started working on getting meetings gone for people that were addicts, that were taking drugs other than alcohol.
And thank God he did. I am so grateful for Narcotics Anonymous.
You know, I am too. I really am. And but he never stopped going to AA meetings also, because he called AA the Other Beautiful Fellowship, of course. And because if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, who knows where Narcotics Anonymous would be today? Because Bill Wilson was very inspirational in helping, you know, Narcotics Anonymous. And Narcotics Anonymous fell apart a lot in the early years, and Alcoholics Anonymous was there to pick us up and help us keep going. And that's how my father got started with Narcotics Anonymous.
You know, there's a saying in AA that the way to start a new AA group, all you needed was a resentment and a coffee pot, and the coffee pot is optional.
I like that.
Yeah, that's how most AA clubs or groups anyway start. Somebody gets a resentment. Somebody doesn't like some, the way they're running the show. So it was interesting. And then and so you got to meet Bill W., you said, when you were six?
When I was about 6 or 7, I did meet him. I was very fortunate to meet him. Of course, I didn't remember that till years later. I was very little, and I went to a lot of meetings with my father, AA and NA. And I was very fortunate to be able to do that.
Oh, you're quite the treasure. I know you don't look. Kathy and I had a nice little chat earlier, and she's a very humble lady, and that's probably in my experience is folks that really have a good program come off that way. They just do. So really glad that you're here. We have a caller I'm going to take, and if he has any questions, is that all right with you, Kathy?
Oh, sure. That's fine.
Okay. Let me see if I get a hold of him. 5115, hello.
Hi, this is Penny.
Hi, Penny. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
You're welcome. Did you have a question for Kathy?
No, I'm just really interested because I've been in recovery from alcoholism and addiction since 79. And
wow.
They absolutely would not let me go to their meetings. So all of my recovery has been in Al-Anon, and they did not have NA in my area at the time. So I've never been to an NA meeting, but I've always been interested.
Oh, interesting.
Well, that's very interesting. I'm glad you called and joined us.
Yeah, I was really interested. I've been in recovery for a really long time, and I've never been to AA meetings, and I've never been to NA meetings, so I'm kind of trying to get back into doing that because I really feel like I missed out on the fellowship. I definitely didn't miss out on my spiritual growth, and I think that my higher power put me where I needed to be, but
okay.
So it's interesting
to
me to, I mean, AA was really a lot different in the late 70s, so I'm sure it was even more different than that in the 50s.
I'm sure. Usually with sponsees, sometimes I'll recommend that after they finish working the 12 steps in AA, that if they want to be a really good sponsor, they need to go to Al-Anon. I consider Al-Anon postgraduate AA. You know,
I do too, to tell you the truth. So, I mean,
the drunks don't like to hear it, but I believe that.
I think if somebody just settles for not drinking, that somebody ought to take them out in the street and beat them with a wet noodle. I mean,
well, yes.
I mean, that is not what this is about.
Well, I know, but I can't run.
I know.
I was king, I would use that wet noodle. The big book is real explicit. We think a man unthinking who says, sobriety is enough. It's not enough. That's why it's in there. You're expected to grow spiritually, emotionally, if not financially, but you're supposed to grow. This is what this is all about. But thanks, Penny. I'm just going to put you back on mute so we can get back to
okay.
chat. Thanks for calling in.
You bet. Thanks for being there.
You're welcome. All right, Kathy. So, now, how big is your family? You said, Nucky, you had several siblings?
I had 3 older brothers and a younger sister.
Now, where are you in the scheme of things? Are you the baby or the oldest?
No. I had 3 older brothers, and when my first older brother, when he turned 17, he went into the Army to get out of the house because it was very dysfunctional. And then my next brother, he also went into the Army. You didn't have to be, my parents signed in papers and let them, you didn't have to be a graduate then to get into the service back in the 50s. He went into the Army. And then that left my brother that was 3 years older than me and myself in that very dysfunctional house. And then when my little sister was born, I was 6 years old. And she really, she wasn't in the brunt of the worst of it all, if you can understand what I mean by that.
Yes.
My father was doing better. But, you know, the reason I wrote the book, I did not write the book to get rich, you know what I mean, or make money. I wrote the book because my oldest daughter, I have four children. We have four children, my husband and I. I wrote the book because my daughter called me in 2004, and she had been on the computer, and she was online, and she noticed that my dad, her papa, was all over the internet as the founder of Narcotics Anonymous. And she called me, and she told me to go online to Narcotics Anonymous Jimmy Kay. And through a long process, because I had no clue how to even get on a computer, my grandson helped me. And I think I stayed up all night reading, and I found out that there was so much misinformation out there about my dad. And that really bothered me, because I feel that history should be as accurate as it, you can make it, or as it should be.
Sure.
And so that's why, and then my daughter told me the next day, Mom, you need to write a book. And I said, I can't write a book. I was actually laughing at her. And she said, if Britney Spears can write a book, you could write a book. And
but she did have a point.
Yeah, that was the year Britney Spears wrote her first book. So I thought, okay, you know, I think I will write a book. And so that's how my book came about. And
what's
the
name
meantime,
of it?
It's Every Addict's Friend, Jimmy Kay, Reflections of a Daughter.
Wow.
And so that's why I wrote the book. And in the meantime, as I'm writing the book, not realizing really honestly that I have a problem with drugs myself. I was using drugs from doctors. I had had three neck surgeries, and I really did not realize that I had a problem with drugs. I was taking pain pills, and I was abusing them. And I didn't think I had a problem because I was getting them from doctors, and that is so common. I found that out. A lot of people do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I found that, you know, it is definitely a family disease. But anyway, as I'm writing the book, I was finding that I was taking more and more pills. But in the process of it all, I was connecting with people in writing the book that I knew when I was a teenager back in my dad's house in the early days, who were members of the fellowship that were helping my dad, and they were sending out literature, and they were starting meetings, and I was connecting with all these people that I knew when I was 12, 13, 14 years old. And in the process of that, I was invited to speak and do at history workshops at conventions. And I would get up and introduce myself just as Kathy. I did not even realize I was an addict. I really, truly didn't. And it was when I went to San Antonio, Texas, to the World Convention. You know, they have those every few years. I imagine AA does that. I'm not sure, but
We had one in San Antonio 2 years ago.
Okay, this one was in 2007 that I went to. And it was there, and I had made a lot of good friends in Narcotics Anonymous, just as Kathy, Jimmy's daughter. And it was there that I realized, standing out on a bridge, you know, when you have that moment when it just slaps you in the face and you know you're an addict. And I was standing on the bridge. It was actually the Riverwalk. and it hit me, and I knew I was an addict. And I talked to this woman, and she said, well, I can't say you are, you know, but you better go get some of those informational pamphlets and read them. And I knew I was an addict, and I've been clean for over 5 years now. But so I went back, and I had a lot more work to do on my book. I wasn't done with it yet, and it's been amazing writing this book, and I have totally changed a lot of things about my life, and I have found out that I have learned to forgive my father for so many things that I was blaming him for, and it's just opened a whole new world to me being in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm clean today, and I see things clearly, and I see things differently, and it's been a wonderful ride. It really has.
So it's truly life-saving. You know, I wouldn't be alive today if it wasn't for the 12 steps, and I got a lot more NA than I did AA.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I tell people my father not only gave me life once, but he gave it to me twice.
Wow.
Was he an absentee father most of this time, though? I know when we were talking about it, you get a mission. You go on a mission to help people. When I have my sponsees, the ones that really attain and maintain long-term sobriety, explain to them, if you really want to get this thing, you're going to have to get passionate about it. You're going to have to get passionate about being in service. Otherwise, you're just circling the field waiting to run out of spiritual gasoline. The problem is if the passion sometimes goes into a mission and then everything else is put on the side. How did Jimmy fare with his family during this mission he was on?
Well, you know, he was always home for Christmas. He came home for dinner. You know, when he was 7 years old in Scotland, that's where he was born, he didn't have a lot of young friends. I write about this in the book. He had older friends, and he had a friend named Mr. Cookshank, and he was the town drunk. And when Mr. Cookshank fell down a bunch of stairs and he cut his head open, he went and got his mother, and he told his mother that his friend had cut his head open, and he ended up going to an asylum. And when his mother took him to this asylum to see his friend did not recognize him, and he told his mother, someday I'm going to help people like Mr. Cookshank. And, you know, I believe that at the age of 7, my father set his destiny. He not only became an alcoholic, he became an addict. And when he got clean at that AA clubhouse, I believe that, and then he went and he ended up taking a bunch of drugs from doctors like I did. You know, he took all the pain pills, and then he had to get clean on that. He wasn't home a lot. He would go down to Skid Row in L.A., and he would get the addicts off the street, and he'd get them clean. I remember them laying on our couch in the house and him helping them and them throwing up, and then he's feeding them honey, and he's feeding them soup, and he's doing everything he has to do to help them. And he went to meetings every night of the week. He was very seldom home. And it was very difficult on my mother because she was the one that was raising the children. And the reason I went to so many meetings with him, mostly on the weekends and in the summer, is because I had my dad that way. That's the way I could have my father. And there were always people at the house and meetings around our little kitchen table, and no, he wasn't home a lot. When he was home, he was back in the back room tape recording or running the mimeograph machine. And it affected the whole family. You know, my older brothers, they said it was the most dysfunctional family, and it was. It was very, very hard on the family because he was a visionary, and he was a dreamer, and he was a man with a mission. He was on a mission to do what I believe God put him here to do. And today I can understand that, and today I can forgive him for that, because I'm very proud of what the man did. And I think what he did is still saving people's lives today.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, probably tens of thousands, if not more, have benefited from your father's efforts back then. I mean, you got to remember, he was planting seeds. And sometimes the problem, and I know this from my own personal experience, when you can't really count the fruit, you can only count the number of seeds. Because there's no telling what that fruit is going to look like and when it's going to show. Fame found St. Patrick soon after he died. Sometimes the acclaim and the effort and all that doesn't come until you're gone.
Right.
And I believe that there's a spiritual connection to that. You never hear like a prophet is not recognized in his own home or his own town or his own country. And I believe the reason for that is that the acclaim of men is an abomination to God.
Mm-hmm.
So his reward, the reward from coming to work, oftentimes is not found here. There is a reward, but it's not here and it's not now. Right here and right now is the work. You do the work. And then you got to keep in mind that this is just about the work, and it's not about you. God always has to go first, and then it's not about you, and then it'll work. I'm sure your dad felt the same way.
My father was very humble. My father never wanted recognition for what he did. He believed that there should be no one person as the head of Narcotics Anonymous. We are all equal. It's a we fellowship. You know, we're no better than the newcomer that walks in the door. We are all equal. And that's the way Narcotics Anonymous is. There's no CEO. There's no president. We are all equal. And he never wanted recognition. He ran that little World Service office, a little tiny office, when it first got started. Well, it was out of the house for a lot of years, and then it was on Vigeland Boulevard. And he ran that on his little Social Security check. He ate soup to keep it going. And the sad part about it is, in 1983, he went to the office one morning, and his key would not fit in the door. And I guess some of the members felt that they turned their back on him, and they locked him out of that little office. And it was heartbreaking. And 2 years later, his cancer really took over, and he died. But, you know, from his hospital bed, he was still telling people, you've got to help the newcomer. You got to get out there and help the newcomer. You have to keep meetings going. That was his love. That's what he cared about more than anything. And,
boy, that really inspires me. It seems like the rooms of all the 12-step programs are not filled. They are not hotbeds of sanity. They're not filled with a lot of really healthy people. I mean, the reason we come into the program is that we have severe problems. But things like that just amaze me. The lack of appreciation, the lack of recognition, until we're looking back on things, and then it seems to come into focus. But anyway, I'm certainly glad that he did all the things that he did. It's really interesting to hear you talk about your household and how he was constantly helping people. Our focus here at rumradio.org and the Rum Radio program is working with others. We've got to help the newcomer. And it seems to me that we've lost some of that in recent years, but we'd like to go back to basics. And Kathy, you're helping us. I mean, yes, Kathy, you're helping us do that.
Well, you see, that's why I've tried to continue to get this book out there. It seems like every time I get the book out there and somebody reads it, I get a lot of good feedback on it, and it seems to fire people up for a while. because, like I said, believe me, I didn't write the book to get rich.
Would you say the name again? Because I'm on the internet. I'm trying to find it. I might be spelling something wrong. Say it again.
Well, where on the internet are you looking? Like, I'm on Facebook. It's Every Addict's Friend, Jimmy K. Reflections of a Daughter.
Jimmy K. J-I-M-M-Y?
Yes.
Reflections of a Daughter?
Uh-huh. Am I talking to Harold?
Yeah, this is Harold.
Okay. Because Joseph has, it's on Facebook.
Yeah, I found it. I figured it was good. I thought it was good that you mentioned it several times. We're going to have you mention again. Maybe people need to get pencils. I get that with Rum Radio. As simple as that name is, people need to hear it 3 or 4 times, usually before it sinks in a little bit. You know, it's just passing right now. So if someone's listening, and our archives usually average about 1,200 listens a week on average.
Oh, okay.
So,
you know,
so
you can get it. I'll give you my phone number. You can get it by calling me. I love talking to people.
Oh, that's way. Thank you.
I'll give you my phone number. It's 541-291-3501.
I've got it. Say it again.
You can also get it through lulu.com.
That's great. Do you live in Oregon?
I do.
Okay.
On lulu.com, you just do a search with either my name or the title of the book. But if you order it through me, we pay the shipping in the United States.
Well, that's nice.
And I am also always honored to sign the book to anybody that would like me to.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That makes it very personal. It's a connection
with
history.
Yeah, I like to personalize it, yeah.
Yeah, you got a connection now. There's a direct connection. It makes it intimate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to go back a little bit on the those folks locking your dad out of his office. I'm sure that would have been a lot of outrage. My experience sometimes are wrath is cruel and anger is outrageous, but who can stand before envy? And when I hear things like that, I hear a lot of envy, especially with addicts. You could tell a drunk anything, you just can't tell them much. And
right.
if you have a message that is strong and different and has a reach, it threatens a lot of folks. What was the reason why they give your dad a reason why they locked him out of his own office?
Well, I can tell you this. I don't really know why they locked him out, except that I know who the people are that locked him out, but because I'm a member of this fellowship, I did not put names in the book. They know who they are. When they read the book, they know who they are. Some of them are still alive today. And I did that because I'm just not like that. I'm not going to go after people. I'm not going to hurt families. I'm not going to hurt children or grandchildren. I think they locked him out because a power struggle. They wanted the power. I think it could have been a jealousy thing. And, you know, he wasn't outraged. He called me. He was hurt. He was very hurt. And but, you know, they may have turned their backs on him, but he did not turn his back on Narcotics Anonymous. He continued to go to meetings. He continued to find the newcomer and help them, and he continued to start meetings. He never walked away from Narcotics Anonymous. I don't know if I could have been that big of a person. I might have said, screw you, and walked away.
Really? We say
that's,
the
that's character.
Pardon?
That's character.
He was a wonderful man. You know, I really got to know him in writing this book, and I wished I could have a half hour with him with a cup of coffee. I really do, but he's gone and I can't.
Well, I believe you will eventually. But
I'm
just
sure.
Not today.
Yeah, the meeting in
the sky. I'm pretty confident. I'm pretty confident how that's going to work. We say in the meeting sometimes we are not saints. You've heard that in our preamble?
Mm-hmm.
We are not saints. If we're not saints, we're surely angels with dirty faces.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how I see a guy like your dad. I mean, you know, that's a lot of humility to be locked out after doing that work and scrimping by and the Social Security and, you know, why? You know, most people would look at that and go, what's in it for him? People cannot relate the fact that you might be doing something with no motive. You know, Shakespeare said, there's nothing so common as the wish to be remarkable.
Yeah, true.
You know, people look at, well, he's trying to be something he's not. N.A., they'll say sometimes in the traditions that people come in and they haven't done anything with their life, so now they're going to do something in AA to be somebody. And you know what? I go through that from time to time, and I always check my motives. But the thing is, it's a good work. And that's as far as I need to know. Does a man light a candle and put it under a bushel, or does he put it on a candlestick for all in the room to see? So for these guys to come along and blow out the candle is unconscionable. And I tell you, it really speaks highly how your dad handled it. I don't think I would. I'm Italian. if somebody would have done that for me, you know, I've been accused of being a racist and a sexist. And I said, no, that's not true. I says, if anything, closer to the truth, I'm a plagiarist. I says, what my detractors don't understand is that I'm Sicilian. So when it comes to busting horns, I'm an equal opportunity employer. I would not have taken it as lightly as your dad would. There's no way. But,
yeah.
You know, God bless him that he was able to turn the other cheek and just go back in and continue the work with whatever tools he had left. That speaks very highly of the man.
Do you have a minute so I can read you something that he wrote?
Oh, you bet. Well, I'd love to. Go ahead.
This is at the very beginning of my book, and my father had tuberculosis for over a year, and he had lost his voice, and when he got it back, this is what he wrote, and this is what he said at a meeting or a convention. And he said, I've said many times a long time ago, a man without a dream is only half a man, and a fellowship without a vision is a farce. And I still believe that and know damn well that we can find fulfillment in living a day at a time here. And a day at a time, our vision and our fellowship can become a greater reality. There are things that I am still interested in. 2 years ago at the convention when I had just regained my voice, I said then that as long as I live, I would use what voice and what strength I have to further the efforts of Narcotics Anonymous and that other beautiful fellowship I belong to, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I intend to do that. But it's going to take all of me, and it's going to take all of you, and all of the people that you're going to talk to, and all of the people you're going to carry the message to make this a greater reality, Jimmy Kinnon.
Wow, that's beautiful.
It is beautiful, and he, you know, he loved Alcoholics Anonymous as much as he loved Narcotics Anonymous. And,
there's something I've read that without a vision, the people will perish. And it's guys like your dad that brought a vision. You know, Bill W. had the vision, you know, in the big book it's called A Vision for You, and he had a vision too. He really believed that the concepts and the spiritual concepts contained in the 12 steps would change the fabric, the moral fabric of society, of the world. But what I've learned is really from Dr. Bob, and Dr. Bob had sponsored 5,000 men,
if you think you can change the world, it's either grandiose romanticism or politics. You can only change one man at a time. But the man that is the biggest change is the fellow who's trying to go out and help his fellows. But anyway, so that's now he's got the office. He goes back in now, and then the on the book. And how's the book going? Is it moving as quickly as you like? I'm hoping this is going to be a help to help get the book out. This information is essential for some people, especially people that are not even in AA or NA or CA. There's a lot of folks out there. Pardon me?
It's just getting the people to know it's out, you know, even from Narcotics Anonymous. I tried to get it through Hazeltine, and I tried to get it through many of the publishers out there. Of course, that's when the bottom of the market went out on housing and everything, and, you know, it was really hard. But the problem with a lot of these editors out there who are putting books out is anything to do with addiction or addicts, they seem to think that we're out there pushing you know, baskets around, and that we're all poor and we're homeless. They don't get it. They don't understand that we are clean and we're living normal lives and we have good jobs, and they just don't get it. And
they don't see a market.
No, I self-published. That's why I went through Lulu. And that's why I'm on Facebook, and I do the best I can to get it out there. And I, you know, my husband and I do the best we can. We sell it at conventions, and we're still, I don't think we're completely out of the red yet, or, you know, we're still behind a little. But it doesn't matter, you know. We're okay. We have a roof over our head, and that's all I care about. You know, I'm not out to become a millionaire. We live on our Social Security. We got a nice little house here by, you know, in Bandon, and that's all that matters. And my main concern is I want people to read it. I want them to know the history. I corrected all the errors that I read online. You know, they said my dad did heroin. He never did. They said he had 6 kids. No, he had 5. You know, there were so many errors out there. They had my mother's name wrong. And I just wanted to correct all that. And I wanted them to know how hard he worked to get this fellowship off the ground. You know, he spent 35 years of his life on this. And then what the man went through, all the trials and tribulations, you know, that he went through to get this thing going and to keep it going. He was so dedicated to Narcotics Anonymous and the love he had for the addict. And that's all I care about. So I hope this helps.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. I know a lot of the folks I was posting in the Facebook on some of the NA sites. Of course, when I go to I've been to several NA meetings, one reason or another, just to check it out. But you know, I did drugs. I don't see how you could be an alcoholic nowadays, and because the availability of cocaine or any of the other drugs, or some marijuana, you know. So the delineation between addictive substances is paper thin, if not at all. So I go back to the third tradition of AA. It talks about early on, a drug addict comes in, and from what I understand, he was black and was a cross-dresser. I can't imagine the drunks were in a tizzy with all this, and a drug addict and not an alcoholic. And they mention it in the traditions, you know, not specifically, but they talk about him, and they didn't know what to do. And the conclusion was, what would the master do? And the master referred to Jesus Christ. What would Jesus do? We've heard that term. That's what they said. They didn't say Jesus. Jesus is not in the big book, but the Christ is. And what would the master do? And they said, well, then the answer was obvious. We had to let him in. To tell him he couldn't be in here could be a death sentence, and we couldn't have that. And it turned out it worked really well for both AA and for the drug addict. And
right.
It was positive. Now,
later on, Bill comes out and he makes statements about in the grapevine, I think it was in, just before he died, I think in 1958, about the drug, the delineation between the drug addict and the alcoholic. Now, I know Bill took drugs, right? Is that your understanding also?
Oh, right. I wrote about it in my book.
Dr.
Yeah,
Bob
Bill
took drugs. I know he was a pill head.
And so did Bill. Mm-hmm.
And so did Bill. So I don't understand. Why do you think that he came up with the singleness of purpose that really actually went against the traditions that he wrote about?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, can I quote you on that?
Sure. Sure. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I tell people.
Let me tell you this. I think, personally, because Bill did drugs, I think that's why he continued to help my father to really get Narcotics Anonymous going. Think about that.
Amen. Yeah.
I didn't think
of
that.
I really do. Yeah, I do. I think that's why. You know, the man that sold us our house here in Bandon, Chaz, a wonderful man, he is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we went to several meetings here. There's no Narcotics Anonymous meetings here in this little town of Bandon, so my home group is 23 miles away in the next town over. And when he took his 20 years, he invited us to go to his meeting, which we did go. And I introduced myself as I'm Kathy, I'm an addict, and they were very nice to me. You know, they were very accepting. We've been to several meetings. And Chaz even bought my book. He said he's done drugs and he's done alcohol, but he likes the AA meetings, which is fine. And, you know, the way I look at that is, for me, I think it's a matter of where somebody's comfortable. Whatever meeting they want to be in, it doesn't matter. It's their choice to the 12-step program they want to be in. And if it works for them, that's wonderful. You know, I came into NA to get myself better and not to tell others how to live their lives or what meetings to go to. I think it's just, I think it's very immature when people start, when they, like, if I'm in an NA meeting and somebody comes in and says, my name's so-and-so, and I'm sober today, and then somebody in that NA meeting says, no, you're clean. I think that is so immature. I think they need to leave people alone, and same thing in an AA meeting. I think people need to leave people alone and not take the space up in their own head to worry about what somebody else is doing.
Amen.
You understand what I'm saying, you know?
It's
a lot easier to focus on someone else and leave your own work undone, and that's a lot of what's happening, is that it takes a lot of courage to work the steps, and so while we're waiting and the enemy's trying to talk us out of doing our work, one of the distractions is to get into other people's business all the time, and so that goes on. And I've got to be honest, I did that for years. It took years for me to get around to working the fourth step, getting out my pen and paper and really doing the work.
Right.
Thank God I did. You know, I'm alive today because of that. But in the meantime, it's very common. At least my experience is I would rent people space in my head rent free.
Yeah.
I like to think of it this way. Some people don't know me and they don't like me. Some people get to know me, then they don't like me. It's none of my business what you think of me, because you think so little of me anyway. If not in stature, surely in time.
Mm-hmm.
We have Penny is still holding on. I'd like to get a comment. Is that all right, Kathy? See how she
Sure,
thought?
Sure. Oh, do what you have to.
And we've got
Penny
a half an hour.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we'll like to say hello. You know, thank you for holding on that long. What'd you think of the show?
Just awesome. And I'm glad you put me on, because Kathy, I may have some contacts, and I really truly mean may. I don't know. I do know an author that just published a book called 30 Pieces of Silver. I think that was the name of his book.
Uh-huh.
And he had a terrible time getting it published, and I've talked to him quite a few times on Facebook, so I know for sure I can get in touch with him.
Oh, and wonderful.
I'm in a couple of Facebook groups that are for parents of addicts.
Uh-huh.
And they're... Nobody is more of an extreme rescuer than a mom with an addicted kid. I mean, they're all untreated nonners, so I'm sure they would love to hear about your book. So,
how can we hook up on Facebook?
I'm sorry?
How can we hook up on Facebook?
These are private books. I'd have to friend you, or you'd have to friend me, and then I can ask them to add you into the group because they're locked and they're very anonymous, you know. So, I mean, if you guys went on Facebook right now and searched for any of them, or the Al-Anon group I'm in or the Big Book group I'm in, you wouldn't be able to find them.
Did you write my phone number down? Yeah,
write my phone number down,
Danny.
Oh, I did, because I intended to call you. It's 541.
Okay.
291-3501.
Right. Why don't you call me when we get done here?
Okay.
Okay, Penny.
It was nice
talking to you.
Thanks,
yeah,
Penny.
Yeah, that was really interesting. I didn't know any of the history of NA. I didn't hear of NA, and I was addicted to prescription drugs. I've never seen a street drug. I mean... So I really understand that. But I also am an alcoholic, and it was real hard for me to understand why. I mean, I don't know. People in AA told me I could come to their AA meeting, but I could just say, hi, I'm Penny, I'm an alcoholic. And I said, but why would I do that? You're telling me this is an honest program and that my recovery depends on me being honest.
Yes.
And I don't want to hide
Absolutely.
The fact that I was addicted to prescription drugs. You know, I don't feel like... So, anyway, I mean, it all worked. I was definitely qualified for Al-Anon, believe me. I mean, I was the biggest victim martyr that ever... rescuer, all of it. So, it worked out great for me. I had a hard time letting go of the resentment. I mean, I really had a huge resentment against AA for many years. And then... I ended up being an addiction counselor, and I sent hundreds of people to AA. And now, since I've been going on Facebook and stuff, I'm going, shit, I'm not sure I want to send people to AA, you know, or people are telling them you're not doing this right, and you got to do it this way, and it's my way or the highway. Somebody just...
Well, Penny, I hope what we're doing is bringing the ship back around. You know, we've gone off the rails in some areas, but some groups in some areas, you know, they're not like that. It's you got to remember, you know, like Anthony said about Shakespeare, about the death of Caesar. The bad is always, the good isn't turned in the bones. The bad always comes out. You know, people will
yeah.
always remember the worst case scenario. That's not true. There's some pockets that have problems, but each group is autonomous. But as a whole, it's still doing a good work. And I think going back to a basics, that makes all the difference.
And I know I've been talking to my friend, and I really related to your dad, Kathy, and I thought, because I feel like I'm on a mission to go to every AA meeting and NA meeting I can find. And I'm just going to sit there and share my story, whether they want to hear it or not. You know?
There you go.
I mean,
yeah, you show those drugs to
you. It's got to be well people, because one of you guys said, and I really agree, there's a lot of sick people. I mean, people that come to AA and Al-Anon or Cocaine Anonymous or sexual addicts or whatever it is, you're sick or you wouldn't be there. I mean, strange, well, people don't just walk off the street and want to go to a 12-step meeting. So to me, if you're in that meeting and you're acting a little nutty, I expect you to.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not a hotbed of mental health.
No. But I'm not going to sit there and tell you everything that's wrong with you. I'm going to sit there and tell you what things that you can do that will help you.
And
really
the way Joseph like to respond in the meetings is to remind everybody that the most important person there is the new guy or the new gal, and we focus on that, and we let other things go, and so it's not easy, but again, helping the new person is really, really important.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree. And the program, I mean, our higher power or God works with all of us differently. I mean, I know for me, anger was one of my first character defects that I gave up. I didn't even know I was self-righteous or arrogant until I had been in the program for probably close to 20 years. I mean, I had no clue
that
I was. So it would have been ridiculous for somebody to tell me that they were going to fire me as their sponsee because I was so arrogant. I would have thought, geez, you're one crazy person. I'm the most humble person I've ever met in my whole life.
I might not be much, but I'm all I think about.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have different things removed at different times, and we grow in different. So it's silly for me to sit there and be self-righteous and judge you because you don't have a job or because you get angry or I don't like the way you're raising your kids or I don't know. I just don't feel like I help somebody. Because when you're in denial, you don't see your flaws, no matter how many people tell you what a jerk you are.
No, it's a spiritual concept. It's in through a glass darkly, but face to face, to be seen, but not to be, to be seen and not to be known. We don't see ourselves like other people see us. If Thomas Martin said, if we could see ourselves like other people see us, we would truly be humble. Saran, a French philosopher, said if we could see ourselves like other people see us, we would disappear on the spot. And Robert Browning, the plowboy poet, said in a Poetry to a Louse, if we could see ourselves like other people see us, many a foolish notion it would dispel. So we never really get to see us. If we did, it would really be quite humbling.
Oh,
Kathy, do you have any last words before we close?
Pardon?
Do you have any last thoughts or words you'd like to get out? One more time with the book?
No, I'm okay with the book. I really appreciate that you had me on your show, and I thank you. And it really was a humbling experience, and I thank you so much. And Kenny, let's get together on Facebook. And Harold, thank you. It was nice talking to you, too.
Yeah, I thank you very much for being on. And I'd like to say one more thing about N.A., over the years, I attended AA, I attended Al-Anon, I attended NA, and I must say, and I do say to the recovering people that I work with, that I really got the most from NA because the people there, attending there, seem to understand the life and death nature of the struggle more than anyone else. And so there was an earnestness about the NA meetings that really, really helped me a lot and helped to keep me alive. And so I put a lot of time into both Al-Anon and NA. I've gone to meetings in other countries, and I've started meetings and kept meetings going in Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, to be exact about it. And we had an NA meeting there that the attendance was low, but we kept it going. Also Al-Anon, it would come and go, so during the 4 years I was there, I made sure that there was an Al-Anon meeting every week. And when it was time for me to relocate back in the States, the meeting had grown and it was self-sustaining and it really took off. So I appreciate talking with me tonight about the Al-Anon and with Kathy about NA. I really, really appreciate both those meetings and all the people that have kept it going all these years.
Well, wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I really had a good time, and I really appreciate all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Kathy. Well, good night.
Good night. I'd like to close with the Rum Radio is in 150 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,600 towns, cities, and villages, and we went over 200,000 hits to the website. There's no money being made, and we're anonymous to the 11th tradition. We couldn't pull that off on Facebook, sorry, but we're doing the best we can. So if you have any questions about sponsorship, we cover them all. It's all there. It's not written in stone. We're open. Someone has other ideas or other techniques and other understandings, but this is all practical, good knowledge that you could derive from there, and it's a good resource tool, and who among us has enough tools? So it's rumradio.org. Good night, everybody. Good night, Harold. Good night, Penny. And good night, Kathy.
Good night.
We'll see you on the radio. Good night. Rumradio.org.
Got it.